There's a formula to it. A very simple formula.
What an excellent day for an exorcism.
Fuck the prime time, bitch!
Don't you blame the movies! Movies don't create psychos! Movies make psychos more creative!
What's going on, everybody, to the no-name podcast at this point, because we have not deciphered one yet. Hopefully we will get there, but this is the second episode for no-name podcast. And I am Scott, and I am featured with Sean, and we will be talking about a cinematic adventure, to say the least, of Kiss Meets the Phantom of the Park. One of Sean's favorite movies, I bet.
Oh, it's the greatest movie ever made.
I mean, obviously, but even if it wasn't Kiss in it, it would still be the best movie I've ever seen. So
no, it's like 70% because of Kiss.
So I try to think about things at the time they came out. So when I watch a movie from the 50s, I try to think about like being in the 50s, you know, because if you've seen movies today and then you watch something from 55, you're like, oh my, this is cheesy. So I try to think, if I was a teenager in a movie theater in 1955, what would I think? If I was a teenager in 1978, I still think I would think that movie's terrible. Like,
yeah, but like, what if you were like seven in 1978?
Yeah, it would be pretty cool, yeah. But as soon as you turn eight, you'd be like, that movie wasn't
really. It's got 1 year.
It's got 1 year. I've never sat and watched it, and I would say with good reason, I guess, I never watched it. Because I tried. When's the first time you saw it? How old were you when you saw it?
Oh, I have no idea. I've seen it countless times. I had it on VHS as a kid and watched it a lot. And then my older sister, Vanessa, recorded over the tape with the Beetlejuice cartoon. So then I didn't have it for a long time until they finally released the other version of it, which we can get into, because I'm curious which version you watched. But they released that other version on DVD in 2007. And so that was the first time I had seen it in a long time. And I would have been about 12. But I've seen it a lot.
See, that I applaud you. I don't know how. I'll be completely honest. We've had, 2 weeks since we last recorded? I've tried five separate times, and I'm 3/4 of the way through that movie. I have not finished it yet. I have sat down five times. I wake up in the morning on a Saturday. I'm like, dude, I got time. My wife's asleep. Mm-hmm. The dogs are laying down. I'll put it on. I'll finish it. 15 minutes. I'm like, oh my god, dude, I'll finish it tomorrow. So what is the difference between the two versions? Because I'm actually curious. I had no idea there were two separate versions of that.
Yeah, film. So there's the NBC version, because this is a television movie.
Yeah,
it was made for NBC, and that is the version that was released on VHS in the 80s and then Laserdisc in the early 90s. But television productions in the 70s, or I should say American television productions, would often be edited and then released theatrically overseas in like Europe. And so that happened with this movie, where in, I think it was like May 79, a theatrical version of the movie was cut together and released overseas. So main differences are some of the scenes are rearranged. There are scenes that are in the NBC version that are not in the theatrical version, and vice versa. The special effects are better in the theatrical version. And the big noticeable difference is the music. So the background music in the NBC version is kind of stock Hanna-Barbera Scooby-Doo music, because it was Hanna-Barbera that produced it. And then the theatrical version used songs from the solo albums. So stuff like New York Groove, Radioactive, and others.
Okay, I definitely saw the NBC version. Okay. One, because whoever put it online, they left like the commercial breaks in between.
So that's cool.
Yeah, it would like that. It'd fade off and like start a commercial, and then it would skip back to the show.
Oh, so the commercials aren't in it. Ow.
Yeah, that I know. That's yeah, I was kind of upset about that too. But also there was we'll get into the movie, but I just remember thinking of a scene where they had Gene Simmons walking out and he's attacked. It's the robot Gene mm-hmm. Simmons.
Yes.
And they're playing what sounds like porn music from the 70s.
Yes.
Not what I expected them to play. If he's beating up cops, he's just like, what is this?
In the theatrical version, it plays Radioactive.
That makes more sense.
And they play like the, I don't know if you've listened to that Gene Simmons album. They play that little crazy, but they play that like crazy circus music that starts that album when he's like first like busting through the wall. And that mm-hmm. like works really well.
Works really well in that movie. Don't usually go hand in hand, I feel like. So I'm sure you probably know more on the movie than I do. So I'm sure you have a lot of cool snippets you can throw in the middle of this movie. What besides money inspired them to make this horrible thing?
Like, well, I'm sure it seems weird now for a band to do a movie, like because it stopped being a thing. Mm-hmm. But it was a thing that just bands did. Like the Beatles did several movies. Elvis was in movies. Alice Cooper did, I think, at least one, maybe more. Zeppelin had Song Remains the Same around the same time. The difference is those were typically concert movies.
Yeah.
And the bands didn't have superpowers. But, you know, Kiss isn't a normal band. They didn't have a normal manager. Bill LaCoyne was a television producer before managing Kiss. And, you know, they decided to do the Marvel comic book where they were superheroes and they put their blood in the ink, because sure, and they fought Dr. Doom, and that had gone over well and it was actually kind of cool. And so I'm sure it just seemed natural to then do a film. NBC had a slot around Halloween that they wanted to fill, and they approached the band with the idea, with the pitch that it would be A Hard Day's Night meets Star Wars, which is what convinced the band, and they decided to do it.
Yeah, they definitely decided to do it. Everything I kind of looked up secondhand, I guess, about what they thought about the film, apparently they wouldn't even let people talk about it for years. You couldn't bring it up.
No, it was in the contracts of employees that you cannot bring this up around Gene and Paul. It was probably a good solid decade before they would talk about it.
So, that just seems so unfortunate that like you put $3 million into this thing, right? They finally, you have the part where
$3 million.
Insane that it was $3 million. I had to look up the budget. I was like, if it's anywhere over $100,000, I'm shocked. $3 million.
Well, how much of that just went to the band to show up, though?
Exactly.
So, $100,000 for the movie, $2.9 million just for the band to show up.
Yeah. They had to, you know, they got all their friends, family, everyone. Oh, we made this movie. Let's get the first screening. Sit down. And then they put it on, and 15 minutes in, we're like, oh my God, I wish this wouldn't be seen by the public. And there it goes. I'll just start off with the very beginning of the movie. It set the tone for me, was the opening credits. Now, I know special effects in the 70s aren't what they are today. So I look at, again, I try to view it through the times. But for the love of God, like the opening start, it's just kind of them floating. And the most disrespectful part of that whole intro was Ace has his guitar, Gene's got the bass, Paul's got the guitar. Peter Chris is air dropping to nothing.
That's my favorite part. It's just it is so good.
It is so disrespectful to have him just air drumming into nothing. And he's just looking off in the distance.
He just stares dead in the camera.
It was...
Oh,
I was crying laughing immediately. I was like, I cannot believe they didn't even put drumsticks in his hands. Like, just his wrists. That's it. That's all you see. That's literally the note. I have my notes on my phone. It says, ridiculous credits. Peter is just air drumming. That's all I have.
My favorite is when they're on, like, the water. You know what I mean? There's like water rockets and they're like stepping on them, but very clearly not stepping on the water.
Yeah.
Like their feet are in between the streams of water.
You can also see at the very end when they're walking off that Gene is trying so hard not to fall off whatever staircase they're walking down. I'm like, my God, at that intro, it's like, this is going to be great. I apparently put this in my notes. The crowd will be on their feet with applause with a full length roller coaster ride scene at the very beginning, because there was 3 minutes of a roller coaster at the very beginning of this movie. It's like, you can't get it going any more than that. They're like, we're just going to show amusement park footage for five straight minutes.
They shot at Magic Mountain, which is a kind of a big famous amusement park.
I will say, the first 25 minutes plot of this movie, I was like, it's not a bad plot at first. I was like, the idea of a guy taking people and then making them animatronic, I'm like, I can at least get behind that. And then as soon as it was, the first time I saw Paul Stanley's eye glow and then shoot of lit, I was like, they lost me.
Yeah, it's funny because it's very clearly not a movie about Kiss.
Not at all.
So you're kind of watching this movie that is about this mad scientist making robots and this girl trying to get her boyfriend back. And then half an hour in, Kiss shows up and can shoot lasers out of their eyes and breathe fire. And they're still rock stars, too. They just also happen to have superpowers and just kind of wander into this weird robot plot.
That's,
and it's like, what are they doing here? And if you're here, it's also a problem because, like, you're here to see Kiss. If you're watching this movie, you're a Kiss fan. If you're not a Kiss fan, I don't know what you're doing. So you're here for Kiss. And so when you have to spend like 30 minutes or however long it is on these old people arguing about funds for their amusement park, it's like, man, I don't care. Play Shock Me.
I didn't think about that, but that's a really good point. If you're a kid, it's for kids. Like, so I don't need all this funding bullshit plot you got going on. I just need Kiss in front of me.
As a kid, I would just fast forward.
It's like they could have, you could have had two decent movies. If you made one movie about a guy running an amusement park, turning people into robots, or you had a movie where Kiss are superheroes, you could have made two decent movies. Instead,
the latter movie could never have even been remotely good because the members of Kiss cannot act at all.
That is an understatement of the century. That is some of there's one part, I don't know if you caught it, when they're sitting by the pool, they're the poolside scene. Mm-hmm. Where they're at ungodly tall chairs for whatever reason.
Drives and in me robes.
They're in robes and 15 foot high chairs. Like, are y'all lifeguards? Why are you sitting in chairs so high? They cut out Peter's voice and 100% use someone else's voice. And
behind the scenes trivia, his voice is not in the movie at all.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
Outside of singing Beth, because, you know, he has a very, they all at the time had thick New York accents. And when they, you know, went to in post-production, they noticed that they had a hard time understanding him because of his accent. And also, to be real, he was probably high during a
100%.
Lot of this.
Yeah.
But you couldn't really understand a lot of the dialogue. And he refused to show up to do ADR, which is an essential part of movie making. And he just wouldn't show up. So they got a voice actor. So it is not Peter's voice ever. It is a voice actor the entire time, which is why he comes across as the best actor.
Okay, because I guess I didn't realize it beforehand, but when they were sitting in the chairs, the first time they're all getting lines, it would be like Paul and Ace and saying Eck or whatever the hell that was.
Yeah. And story then, about that too. We'll circle back.
When Peter, he just all of a sudden comes in, he's like, well, I was thinking, what the? That's not you. So what's the Eck story? I kind of read a little bit about it, but.
Yeah, so the writers decided when they were hired that they were going to hang out with the band and try to mimic in the script how they talked, which I don't totally believe because like I've seen a lot of interviews and none of them talk like this. Like Gene's very silent because that makes sense for the character, but like Gene Simmons in real life never shuts the fuck up.
Yeah.
So might be a little fibbing there, but Ace wouldn't talk to him. He would only make that sound, that weird like, ah, sound. That's all he would do. And so they went, okay, and wrote it into the script. And that was all he said in the script. And then Ace got the script and got mad because he didn't have any lines. And so then they had to come up with a few lines for him.
That's so, that's so funny. What else did I love? I loved the stereotypical bullies named Slime and what was the other one?
Chopper. Yeah. Don't. What is it? Oh, God. Chopper don't hurt no one unless he wants to.
Yeah.
Beating up an animatronic gorilla.
And the fact they said it took me a year and a half and $30,000 to make this. I was like, really? It took you a
year? It's a dude in a gorilla suit.
There were so many parts of this movie where I've never set out to make like a full length feature movie and stuff. But at what point when you're making it, do you not step back just for a second and go, what in the hell are we making?
What are we doing? What are we doing? Oh, I don't know. I think at that point, you're just like, it's a job. We just got to get it. If you're like the director or whoever, because that's how TV directors think. Like, it's a job. I just got to do it and make sure it's on time and under budget.
Do you think that NBC made enough to recoup off ads for how much they spent into making that movie?
Honestly, probably, yeah.
You think so?
It got a lot of viewers, and that's also probably why it got a foreign theatrical release, was to make more money for it. So, yeah, they probably made their money back, for sure.
Because I was thinking, I was like, Kiss at the time was the biggest thing mm-hmm. on the planet. So I was like, yeah. They probably made a good chunk of change.
Yeah. No, and I'm sure this was successful for them.
Like, they probably, the executives were like, this movie's horseshit. But I know that people are going to watch it, so it doesn't really matter.
No, yeah, kids are going to watch it. I mean, that was the philosophy for so long behind, like, you know, superhero things. It's like, well, we don't care how it turns out. It's like, as long as 10-year-olds like it, we'll make money.
Superman 4. That's where you start getting into all that. What other notes? I wrote so many notes down for this movie and I didn't even finish it. This drove me insane. Whenever they are doing the concert and they're playing, so they played Shout Out Loud. Mm-hmm. I remember that one. I can't remember the second song that I saw them play.
I Stole Your Love.
Stole Your Love. When they played Shout It Out Loud, none of their guitar playing synced with the music. Like Paul Stanley's like windmilling the guitar and nothing's happening in the music, and I was like, that drives, like, I understand that's such a small continuity error, but in my head I'm like, really? Like, you couldn't film it as they're playing it, put that together? Instead they got Ace Frehley over here soloing during the damn chorus. I'm like,
yeah. That's one of the things that is like most apparently wrong is how bad the editing is throughout. And both versions have it, but like in different scenes. So like in the theatrical version, some scenes are edited better, but some scenes are edited worse. And it's like, well, how did that happen?
That's so crazy. Like,
some of this stuff is fixed and some of it is very much not fixed. But they did play a concert. They played a legit concert and they filmed some of it because some of that is used. And then some of it is obviously like
the band studio.
The band just playing on the stage with no audience. Mm-hmm. And Kiss has always been terrible lip syncers. Like, watch any of their music videos. They're bad at it. Like, yeah. Gene hasn't started his habit of this yet. But if you'll watch Kiss music videos, Gene will finger pick the bass.
I've never paid attention.
He doesn't do that. he uses a pick, and it's very obvious that he doesn't know how to use his fingers. And it's very funny.
Now I'm gonna have to go back and watch those videos.
Go watch the I Love It Loud music video, because that's the one that really comes to mind, where it's just like, what are you even doing?
Is it gonna be one of those things like once I see it for the first time, I can never unsee it in anything ever?
Yeah, you'll always notice how bad it is. It's very funny. The concert sequences for me are honestly like the best parts of the movie. Even though the editing is pretty bad and that it isn't always synced up, the footage is really, really cool. You watched the TV production, so I'm sure that print wasn't the best, especially if it's recorded right off the TV.
Yeah.
But the DVD version, and the version that's on DVD is the theatrical version that they put on the Kissology 2 DVD. And they made it look pretty nice, like just like they brightened up the colors really well. And so the concert footage just looks great. And it's really the only footage of the band from that era captured on film. Like there are recordings of the band playing, but usually on like shitty VHS cams that look fine and are cool. But it is really nice to see the band in such clarity, even if it is badly edited lip syncing.
I got a question you'll probably know the answer to. Why the lion roar every time Shane opens his mouth? Did someone have a reason for that?
Well, he's a demon. I love the voice echo. Line has a voice echo, the reverb just the hell out of his voice.
Every word he says, the reverb is cranked all the way up.
So funny.
Just star child. Jesus, man. The lion roar. The first time I was like, okay, whatever. The eighth time I heard it, I was like, are you kidding me?
Someone was really proud of that.
And then Paul has, with his great acting, just goes, think the demon's hungry. It's like, oh, for the love of God.
That line isn't in the theatrical cut because I always forget about it.
The demon's hungry.
And then it stinks up on me. I'm like, oh, God.
Then I don't know what they're called. I can't remember. But the little...
The talismans?
The talismans, yeah. Those things. I got to that point. I've not gotten past that. I don't know.
You haven't gotten past the talismans?
I can't. I've tried.
That's really early.
I'd said 45 minutes on my phone, so I thought I had to be like 3/4 of the way. Am I not even 3/4?
Probably an hour and a half.
Ah, okay. I'm probably halfway.
Yeah.
Okay. I was thinking since it's made for TV, it's probably like an hour. That's what
it's probably an hour and a half.
Okay. Then I made it halfway. I apologize. So I've seen so many terrible movies, but there's just something about this one where it's, I don't know. I just couldn't accept it. I was like, this is just, so I got to the talismans.
The scene where they're showing them to the girl.
Yes. Melissa. And they're like, so they close.
Melissa? Why do I know that?
I'm more impressed you've seen this movie more than once, to be honest. I can't believe. I'd have to be intoxicated or something to finish this movie multiple times. There's no way. Could you imagine being a parent who doesn't in 1978, who's like, I hate Kiss. They're horrible for my kid. Yeah. You put this movie on and now you're watching it as an adult. Like, what in the hell is this movie on my TV that my kid is watching? I already
you know what's sad is that this is not the worst thing you could have been watching in 1978, because that's the year the Star Wars holiday special happened.
See, I've never seen that. Is that just as bad? Is that horrible?
It is so much worse. It is one of the worst things ever made. Like, it is bafflingly bad. Most of that special is spent on, I know you're not into Star Wars, but do you know Chewbacca?
Yeah, yeah.
So on his family, but just them. And you know, Chewbacca doesn't speak English. He growls.
Yeah, he makes it like.
And then Han Solo is next to him to translate it for us. That does not happen in the holiday special. So it is just a bunch of assholes in fursuits growling at each other. And then they'll cut to like some random ass like cooking show or a music video because it's a variety thing. And it's very confusing and very hard to sit through.
I'm going to have to watch that. So I don't know that. I know the first A New Hope or whatever came out in 77, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. So the holiday special came between the first Star Wars movie coming out and the second, right? Mm-hmm. Or
the holiday special is 78. And then Empire Strikes Back, which is the second movie, comes out in 1980.
Okay. So I was wondering, so they were trying to cash in on that big Star Wars boom.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, for sure.
Gotcha.
And I think it was done to sell toys. They had some action figure ideas they wanted to do, and the holiday special was a good way to get it out.
That makes sense. I'm going to have to go try and sit through that now, even though I don't like Star Wars. I'll have to see if I just want to, I want to watch an hour long of just like back and forth to each other for an hour straight with a music video peppered in there.
Bizarre.
It's like
Jefferson Starship, by the way. Like a Wookiee just turns on a TV and suddenly, oh, it's a Jefferson Starship music video now. Okay.
It's very odd for, that. Of all the bands, they could be like, let's play a music video, not Cheap Trick, not anyone.
Well, it's because Star is in their name.
Yeah, they had to. They're like, ah, we got to play this. God, I wish I'd seen more of that movie. But can you fill me in on what I'm missing?
Sure, sure. So I'll start at the beginning because I don't know if I can just start in the middle, especially because it's edited differently. And sometimes that theatrical version is more in my head. So that scene, the talisman scene, I think it's either earlier or later in the theatrical cut. The scenes are all out of whack. It's very bizarre. Like the theatrical version, it's really hard to follow if you haven't seen the NBC version. Like you kind of have to know what's happening. And even then watching the NBC version, you're like, I don't really know what's happening. But so Abner Devereaux, mad scientist, this amusement park, his boss or partner has wasted all of the money to get Kiss here. And when Abner's like, that's not cool, what's his face goes, well, you're fired then.
Yeah.
Now Abner is crazy, and his plan is that he is going to use Kiss to incite a riot to destroy the park.
Okay. I see. I'm up to speed on, I got to the point where he was talking to Gene laid out on like a table and was talking about how his plan was.
The robot Gene. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes. And Kiss is there because they're playing a three night concert. And they also have superpowers. Melissa is looking for her boyfriend who is being mind controlled by Devereaux, not turned into a robot for reasons that are unknown to everyone. He's just being mind controlled. And Kiss is like, sure, we'll help you because they don't have anything better to do, I guess. Devereaux decides that he needs to get the talismans because he bugs Melissa. You saw that, right? Where he gives her like a badge and he's got her bugged. So he's like, I need the talismans because that'll take away their superpowers.
Yeah.
Send Sam to get the talismans, but there's a cosmic force field that protects our talismans. Reverb, reverb, reverb. So Sam fails, goes back to Devereaux, and then Kiss is like, well, that ain't right. You came into our house and ruined our furniture and tried to steal our talismans. So then they go after Devereaux, who hasn't been forced to leave the park. He has been fired, told the partner verbatim, you will regret this day, and just hangs out in this lab all day. No one made him leave.
I didn't know if maybe I was, I wouldn't say out of line, but crazy to think. I'm like, if I fired someone, there's no way I'm letting them go back to the lab that they've been working in.
You fired him, and then he also threatened your life very clearly.
And then
made no bones about it.
You just go back down there, do whatever you want. I don't care.
Do whatever you want. I don't care. I got stuff to do.
That
terrible park owner. Worst park owner.
Horrific. Could you imagine if you own a business and you fire employees? You're like, no, just keep doing what you're doing.
You could just hang.
We're not paying
you're fired, but whatever.
Do whatever you want. Yeah.
What's his plan for the park to run? That dude seems to run the whole park and make everything. What's his long-term goal here?
I also thought it seemed like such a horrific job for that that evil, I just call him an evil scientist, whatever guy.
Abner Devereaux.
Abner. He, whenever Slime and Chopper and all them are going through the haunted house thing, whatever, he's sitting there manually controlling buttons of like having to grab and stuff. Mm-hmm. That would suck. That's your job, is to have to, I hope they stand on this pad right here so I can press this button.
So I can press the button.
You can animatronically make people, but you can't automate a system to send these people down. You got to manually hit that button. You've physically recreated Gene Simmons, but you can't make an automatic AI that will control this whole, nope, you're sitting there still pressing buttons. It's crazy.
Yeah. But so Kiss enters the park because they know Abner's there. And they have three sets of robot fights. So the first one are these like weird, like ape things with in like silver jumpsuits. And they're like jumping off stuff and Paul's shooting lasers and all sorts of silly stuff. Win that fight. They go for a ride on a merry-go-round. Oh, it's not called that. Carousel. Because sure, we're in Magic Mountain. We're going to use the carousel. Entire scene where that happens. They fight some robot samurais. Win that fight. And then they end up in the Chamber of Thrills that the bullies were in earlier. And they fight the Universal Monster robots that are there. Because sure. And while they're distracted doing all this fighting, Sam goes back to the house, to Kiss's house, with a gun, like a laser gun that Abner has. And he's like, this will destroy their force field. Because he just has that.
Obviously.
And Sam uses the gun, destroys the force field, takes the talismans back to Abner. And while Kiss are fighting the Universal Monsters, Abner uses his gun to like shoot the talismans, and that depowers Kiss. So they lose that fight, and Abner Devereaux captures them, locks them in like a laser cage. That is very clearly, the bars are very wide. They could very clearly get through it, but whatever. Well, maybe it would electrocute him. I don't fucking know. But anyway, Abner's plan is now set in motion. The robot Kiss go on stage. This is the third night. And they start playing Hotter Than Hell. But then the lyrics are different. Abner has changed the lyrics. So now it's a song called Rip and Destroy. And what I have never understood about this movie, Abner's plan is to create a riot. Fair enough. I cannot tell if the riot is happening because they're singing the wrong lyrics and Kiss fans are mad about it, or if it's supposed to be like a hypnotism thing. Like Kiss is like chanting, you know, rip and destroy or whatever. And is that supposed to be like hypnotizing them, the audience, into ripping and destroying the park? Or are they just mad that Paul's singing the wrong words? And then they're just going to tear down an amusement park because the words aren't right.
I'd like to think, just for my own sake, that they're just so mad that it's the wrong words. Like, we got to tear everything apart simply because he's using the wrong words.
That's not right. And like, you legit can't tell watching the movie, because when Kiss comes on, the crowd, they have like crowd reaction. The crowd's like, what are you doing? This sucks. Whoa, boo. But then they start chanting Rip and Destroy with the band. So it's like, is it both? Are both things happening? And then Kiss is like, we got to stop it. We got to stop robot us. And so together, using their superpowers, they all focus on the box of talismans that Abner has just left out. He's not here anymore. He went somewhere. But he just left the box of talismans just out. And so they combine their magic powers. The box of talisman lifts, very clearly lifted by wires. You can see the wires. And the talismans floats to them. And as soon as they get the box in their hands, smash cut, they're free and they're on the stage. And they fight them robot selves. you should, if you don't finish the movie, you should at least maybe like fast forward to the fight because the band has stunt doubles, obviously, because they have to fight themselves. And I think the filmmakers thought that because they wear makeup, that you wouldn't be able to tell. And you can very, very obviously tell when it is a stunt double and when it is an actual member of the band. Ace's stunt double is black. It's a black guy in white face. It is very clearly a black guy. Paul's looks nothing like him. Jean's is terrible. A terrible wig. Looks nothing like Jean. Peter's is the closest they got. But yeah, the stunt doubles are awful. It's also an impossible fight to track. You can't tell what's going on because Robot Kiss and Normal Kiss are wearing the same outfits. And there is no, you can't tell the difference. And the stunt doubles are switching. So sometimes, let's say Ace is the real Ace, but sometimes Ace is the robot Ace and Black Ace is the real Ace. And so they're like switching back and forth depending on if a stunt is happening. And so you just cannot follow it at all. You don't know who's winning. You don't know what happened. it ends and you're like, I guess the real Kiss won? I don't know. And then, so they win. They blow up Robot Kiss. The audience is like, we took way too much acid. We don't know what's happening. But then Kiss plays Rock and Roll All Night and they're like, okay.
All right, we're doing it. Cool.
I guess we're just going to continue on. And then the final scene, everybody converges. So Melissa, the park owner dude, and Kiss all converge at Abner's laboratory. I don't know, to arrest him. Probably just to be like, hey, that sucked. Don't do that again. And then just leave him be again.
Yeah, you're still fired.
But like, whatever. And they get down there. And Abner Devereaux is now a catatonic or possibly dead old man. And there's a great line. Oh, he created Kiss to destroy Kiss. And he lost. It's like, good line read, guy. Good job. And then they find Sam. And Sam's just got like a little thing on his neck. And Paul's just like, boop. And then he's not mind controlled anymore. End of the movie.
That was, that had me in tears. I just hearing you explain it and then trying to put that into words or into a visual is insane. Because that same breakdown you just had to give of this movie, someone had to give it a table read. And they were still like, let's do it. Let's you know make what? This movie.
You know what? Let's do it.
Oh my God. The stunt double thing. I didn't even think about the fact they have to fight themselves.
Yeah.
To be the most confusing fight ever because you don't know who's who.
Put them in different outfits. Kiss had other outfits. Just
yeah. If anything, yeah. Make their face paint opposite colors. Something to distinguish them a little bit. That's amazing. It's a shame I didn't, you know, I can't finish it. I wish I would have had a counter of every single time you made that I don't know face. Every time you explained something, you'd be like, and the bars were wide, I guess. Like, it was just that face. You're like, I can't explain it. I guess it's just a thing.
It's just a thing that the movie does. And you just have to go, all right.
Yeah, all right. I guess. That. I also like to think of the crowd watching Kiss fight another Kiss. It's over. And they're like, all right, let's keep the concert going.
That's legit what happens. Paul gets up to the mic and he's like, all right, are you ready for the real Kiss? And the artist just like, yeah. I mean, sure. I'm confused.
You'd never have another concert live up to that in the rest of your life.
Like, we blew up a bunch of robots on stage.
The people in the crowd just I don't even think I'd cheer after that. I don't know what I'd do. I think the rest of the concert for the next 2 hours, I'd just be staring at him like, what the fuck just happened?
I would go to rehab immediately.
Yeah, you definitely need therapy. I was clearly
taking way too many drugs.
Oh, for sure. I'm on something. I got a contact high from somebody. You'd be asking people around you like, are you seeing this shit? And everyone would else be like, yeah, are you?
Dude. Did we nearly start a riot? Rip because the lyrics were different? Were we going to destroy an amusement park?
Yeah, that movie. Jesus. I'm glad you finished it and got to tell me about it. For the love of God.
I didn't even need to rewatch it. Like, I didn't rewatch it for this. I just know it that well.
That's what's so crazy to me is I watched it. I watched another 15-minute segment of it, I should say, a couple hours ago. And I'm still like...
They were like talismans, and you were like, no.
Yeah, dude, the talisman thing, I was like, are you kidding me? Well, because the way they cut it, they went from... The only reason I remember the demon is hungry thing is because he growled, and they go, the demon is hungry. And it cuts immediately hard cut to the talisman. I'm like, is that what they feed him? Like, I don't understand why they're showing me this. And then they're like, it's the talisman. I'm like, okay, is that what they feed him? I don't understand. What the And then they go into it, like, it's where our power, whatever. And you're like, oh, okay.
Without them, no powers. We're just ordinary human beings.
You should have been in this movie. My God, your acting is better than theirs. That's what I don't understand. I know they're not actors at all. But how are you not? Like, you ever see those like insurance commercials or something where you see an actor on the TV and you're like, how in the hell are you in this commercial?
Sure.
That's what that felt like for an entire movie.
Well, because how they made the movie is a guy would stand off camera. He would yell the line. And if the member of KISS said the line correctly, that was the take. And we moved on. God.
I would bet with Ace, it probably took 87 takes per line because I'm sure he was completely obliterated.
Yeah, Peter and Ace partied hard on that movie because, you know, they were very much typical rock stars. But making movies, you have to get up early in the morning. There's a lot of standing around and waiting if you're an actor for a shot to get set up. And Peter and Ace were not having that. Like, they have to get up early in the morning. They have to get the makeup on. They have to get these stupid costumes on. And then they just sit there for hours waiting for the shot to get set up. And Ace would just leave. So there are shots in the movie of both Peter and Ace where their stunt doubles are used. Again, very obvious stunt doubles that aren't stunts just because they left. They would just leave.
I can't believe.
Including some of the concert stuff. There's a shot of Peter on the drum kit that isn't Peter. Like Paul describes it in his book, he says that they were shooting the concert sequence and he turned around and there was an old man in a wig and cat makeup.
That, how many signs does a company need to be like, let's not keep making this.
Let's just pull the plug.
After 2 days of this movie, they're like, you know what? Let's cut our losses. We'll give them, you know, we'll pay them their money and we're going to just not let this happen. Did that come out before their solos dropped? So was it like to promote kind of, I guess, their songs of their solo albums, or did it come out after their solo albums came out?
Well, because post-production on a film is much longer than the solo album, than making albums, the film was shot first. And then the band was in such a bad place and they just weren't speaking to each other by the end of the shoot that was when I think the manager was like, let's go do these solo albums. They're in your contract anyway. And I do believe the solo albums came out about a month before the film aired on NBC, but none of that music is in the film, in the NBC version of the film. So I don't think so. Obviously, putting it in the theatrical version, putting the songs in that was probably a way to promote the solo albums more than anything. So probably more the opposite. It was like, hey, we have these four KISS albums that kind of underperformed because we overshipped them. please go buy them.
Yeah, let's get them. What was it? 1 million of each, right? Isn't that what they ordered?
Yes. Yes.
That's insane. Yeah. Think about a 15-year-old kid's got to buy something. I can't afford four
albums. Yeah.
It's insane.
Very obviously stupid decision.
So would you say, like, Kiss comic book is like peak, and then everything after that is kind of where it starts dwindling? Like, you got the movie, you got the solo albums. Like, where would you say the drop off? What was the peak, and where do you think the drop off started for their nosedive at the end of the 70s?
I would say the peak is Love Gun and Alive 2. I think that was clearly their commercial zenith. And then Phantom is the first in a long series of really, really obviously bad decisions that annihilated their popularity in the US. So yeah, it would start with Phantom, but you could have damaged Control Phantom. But they did a lot of stupid things following Phantom that just killed them.
Yeah, that's how I saw it in my head when I was watching this. And then knowing the time frame of how their band, I was like, this has got to be the catalyst of just every other piss poor decision they made for quite a while. Took a bit to regroup. I'd like to imagine Ace and Peter sitting in, I guess it would be more so Ace, sitting in whenever they're dropping music from the Elder and listening to like their ideas and going like, what? What the fuck are you trying to make? You want to make a concept album off a story? Oh God. Okay. Okay. How much are we making? Fine. I'll do it. I feel like that's how from Phantom on down is that when, how much are we making? Okay. I'll do it.
Well, it's funny you mentioned that because Ace actually didn't go to record the Elder. They started it at his house, and then the producer, Bob Ezrin, wanted to move it to his home turf because that's where his coke dealer was.
Is that true? Like, that's really
yes,
what?
Yes. He,
wow.
His addiction very much fueled what was wrong with that album. I don't know if that's why they went to Toronto, but like, I think that's why that happened. But so they went up to Canada and Ace was like, I'm not going anywhere with this album. And so he would record his guitar stuff and then mail it to him.
That's so crazy. It's good to know that this this cinematic adventure was the catalyst to all those great things to come.
To completely destroying the integrity and success of literally what was the biggest band in the world at that point.
Look at the 1977 Alive 2 Love Gun era to 1980 Kiss. It's just the biggest drop off of superstardom to like laughing stock.
They couldn't
that I can
tour.
Think of. They literally
they
didn't
couldn't tour.
That's I'm trying to
they
think
had
of
to
another
stay in Europe and South America for like 2 or 3 years.
I'm trying to think of another band that went from being that huge to nothing. Probably like
a ton of hair bands.
Hair bands.
Because and nothing that they did wrong. It's just music changed so drastically, so quickly that they just got annihilated.
But even then, I'm trying to like Kiss kind of stood out above the rest at that time. Like I'm trying to think of a band that was just way like Oasis in the 90s were like, like as high as you could get. And then all of a sudden, nothing, like as low as you could go.
I mean, I can't think of a band off the top of my head, but like an actor parallel is like Lindsay Lohan.
That's a good
one. At one point he's like the biggest like actor around, like everybody's talking about it. And then like, I hadn't even thought about Lindsay Lohan in like 15 years.
See, Britney Spears was like that. And then she fell off and then she came back.
She came back pretty quickly though.
She came back hard and now she's falling off again. Like she's like doing this kind of shit. It's like, man, I thought you had it. I thought you shaved your head and went crazy. You came back and now she's going crazy again. I'm like, man.
Well, it's there are outside people affecting her. And so it's a different kind of situation.
Yeah.
Where like something really bad is clearly happening.
There's a lot of shit. It's just, it's so weird seeing someone at that, at a pinnacle that high and then just dropping off. But I've never been that famous, so I don't know what comes with that. Like, it's easy to judge people for making decisions, but like, if you were fucking Gene Simmons in 1977, you'd be like, I'm kind of used to making this $100 million thing.
Well, and just imagine, like, you write a bunch of songs as a just completely just broke person in your shitty Roachville apartment in New York in the early 70s. And then just a couple years later, you're selling out arenas and stadiums all over the world. Everybody is singing along to songs you wrote and chanting your name every night and telling you that you're the greatest thing that's ever lived. Like, even before you get into money or drugs and alcohol or other kinds of addiction, I think just that sort of fame,
like,
I think
ego,
is really corrupting, and very easily so. Because at a certain point, if millions of people are telling you you're the best thing ever, you're going to start believing it at some point.
That's true. That's true. Psychology is so interesting. And when you look at KISS, you can definitely see, I mean, you saw where they come from to where they were. It's like, yeah, they're hacky and cheesy to people now with all the things they've done and stuff. But at the end of the day, dude, when you used to be poor and now you're like, yeah, I'll make this movie, whatever. I'm awesome. First off, I can't do anything wrong at this point, at least in their mind.
Yeah.
And then on top of that, the fat, like you said, $3 million budget with 2.9 going to the band.
Well, it's also important to me. I don't know if that's actually happened. That's just my assumption, because it certainly did not go into the movie.
Without a doubt.
But Gene is interesting in this specific case because I think I have seen a quote where he said he would much have rather been an actor than a rock star. He grew up on horror movies. I think that's what he really would have wanted to do. So for him, to sort of circle back where we started, for him, the motivation is very, it is not hard to convince Gene to do this movie because it's what he wants to do. He wants to make movies. He wants to be Lon Chaney. So for him, he was like, we're doing a movie. Yes, I'm in.
Are you ever going to do a episode on your channel detailing his early and mid 80s movie and acting credentials?
I am scared to do that. I've seen two of them. I've seen Runaway, which isn't bad. It's a decent little science fiction thing written by the guy that wrote Jurassic Park and starring Tom Selleck. That movie's not bad. That movie's kind of an okay science fiction thing. And then I've seen Trick or Treat. Have you seen Trick or Treat?
I have not.
So that is a movie about a rock star that kills himself, but then his ghost haunts his final record. And when this kid plays the record backwards, he summons the ghost of this rock star and then like sends him after like bullies and stuff. It is very bad. Gene Simmons plays a DJ in it. He's a very small part. He just plays a DJ in it. He's actually pretty good. Like, his acting's like not bad. That's kind of good.
I feel like he probably is a decent actor in my head.
When they're not reverbing the hell out of his voice.
Yeah.
You can understand what he's saying. There's a couple good lines in that Trick or Treat where I'm like, oh, that was pretty good. But he's, and Ozzy's in it too. Ozzy Osbourne. Ozzy plays like a preacher in like two scenes. But naturally, because they have these two rock stars, every poster of that movie, Gene Simmons, Ozzy Osbourne, Trick or Treat, and they're barely in it.
Of course.
But Gene is the one to give the kid the record, not knowing that it is possessed by suicidal rock star who is now a ghost.
I can't wait to, if you ever decide to do those on your channel, I'm very excited.
I know there's one where he dresses in drag.
That's the one I think of whenever I don't remember what it's called, but
no, me neither.
Man, this has been a good episode. I enjoyed getting the cliff notes of Kiss Meets the Phantom at the park. It's a very good one, but
of the park.
My apologies. Don't want to put any disrespect on this.
Also, the other difference with the theatrical version is that that version is called Kiss in Attack of the Phantoms.
Damn. Damn. Doesn't Star Wars have a movie that's like Attack of the something?
Attack of the Clones.
And don't they have another one with Phantom in it?
Phantom Menace.
I think they're ripping off Kiss, dude. I think they saw that movie. I think they saw it and they were like, you know what? They were onto something.
You know, there are some weird similarities between The Elder and the Star Wars prequel trilogy.
And what do you mean? Like, how so?
There's a council. There's a weird kind of oath you have to take where you're not allowed to fall in love. And that's all in The Elder. That's all in that Star Wars prequel trilogy. Wow. Like, it's not there.
I'm surprised Gene hadn't sued him yet. If he didn't know about it, he might listen to this and he'd be like, oh, I gotta go sue him.
I think his brag is that the like mentor character in The Elder is named Morpheus. And then there's obviously The Matrix. Gene's like, aha. It's like, no, dude, you just took that from a thing. And they happened to read the same thing and took that name.
Yeah, you're not special. I doubt they listened to The Elder and were like, wow.
Wachowskis did not listen to The Elder. I can guarantee that.
He was just sitting there like, wow. Under
Wouldn't
the rose.
It be something if tomorrow the Wachowskis did an interview and they were like, yeah, that was the main inspiration for The Matrix.
He's like 100% music from The Elder, without a doubt. Biggest inspiration. God, I hope. But for people listening to the No Name podcast, because we don't have a name, and I don't know when we ever will, but we'll try. Let us know what you think of this great film. And I would love to hear when the first time you saw it was. I'd love to hear what your thoughts are and how many times you watch it. Is it a once a year thing? Is it a every Halloween thing? I would love to know, because there's got to be people who suffer through this thing once a year for tradition. Oh, it's you. Good to know. Good to know. But that's the show. Sean, where can they find you for everything you got going?
My Instagram is Sean Blumenschein, and my YouTube channel is the same, where I talk about Kiss, other rock music, and horror films.
There you go. It's an amazing channel. I suggest y'all listen to it. You can find me. I just have a podcast, Partial Artist. I talk about nothing in particular ever. So if you just want to sit and listen to someone talk about nothing for, 45 minutes, then there you go. You can check me out there.
Fun he also stuff. Has very good episodes on the first two Nightmare on Elm Street.
I did the horror movie stuff. And then now that I'm doing horror movie stuff here, I think I'm going to lay off on that. But yeah, I did horror stuff for a bit. But that's the show. My dog's freaking out. I don't know why. But I hope you all enjoyed it. Next episode, I believe, is going to be talking about horror movie remakes. So that should be interesting. I'm very curious to hear Sean's best and worst remakes, because I have a feeling we're going to be extremely different. But that's the episode. Thank you all for listening. Appreciate the love and the support y'all give us. We'll eventually have a name someday. Peace.